Welcome to the People of Packaging podcast, where we introduce people to the world of packaging and the people of packaging to the world. Here are your hosts, Adam Peake and Ted Tate.
So Jared Spencer is with Adept Packaging, and he's the latest guest on the People of Packaging podcast. Adept is doing some incredibly awesome things for the packaging industry with packaging engineers and job placement and driving value and design and all sorts of cool things. They're applying technology. It's really exciting to see what Adept's got going on and the role that Jared is playing in that. So I hope that you really learn a lot and that you can reach out to Jared from Adept. And this is my interview with him. All right. Well, I'm here with Jared Spencer. Jared is from Adept Packaging. I have known Jared, I don't know, it's probably been a year or so.
Yeah, about a year, year and a half.
Hey, something like that. We've been on a few projects together and we've kind of kicked this around. This idea of a podcast, you're going to introduce yourself, but you also have a podcast, correct?
I do. Yeah. So yeah, I started one about 2 years ago, kind of similar setup, more around kind of focusing on sort of price movements in the market and understanding changes to the underlying packaging industry.
Awesome. Well, we need more. I've said this to as many people as I can. I actually had a call with a guy today who said, I've been thinking about starting a podcast on packaging. And I was like, do it. It's like, and it was like, there was like trepidation. I'm like, I don't make any money on, you're not competition. So we need to elevate the industry. We should have, my longstanding thing is that I listen to 4 podcasts about the Denver Nuggets. So yeah. I don't even know 4 packaging podcasts. I think,
I only saw one when I started, and it was basically just, I think, Packaging World, like, reading their articles.
I know that Packaging Europe, so Tim Sykes hosts one over there. I just saw that the Association of Plastic Recyclers started one, so that's pretty cool. And then my good friend Avelio Matos, I said Avelio for a while, but Avelio Matos, started Package Design and Box, which is super cool. And everybody should, I mean, it's all collaboration in the podcast world, I think, for packaging.
Yeah, so,
awesome. Well, introduce yourself, podcast extraordinaire.
And, I know, I said, I'm jealous of your setup there. I'm still rogue in my basement here.
That's right. It's all right. There's grace for everybody during these times.
Exactly. So yeah, so Jared Spencer. So I lead up within Adept Group. We have 4 major divisions, one of them being Value Optimization, which is the team I lead up. We specifically kind of focus on, you know, margin improvement across the packaging structure. So, you know, ultimately what that kind of really means is kind of take that McKinsey approach, really trying to understand where can we find efficiencies in purchasing, production, and delivery. We're usually starting with like a clean sheet process. So really, you know, bottom up, build out of the cost structure, what are the costs to manufacture, and following that through. And what we've kind of seen, and where I think we've got sort of a unique niche is, you know, we'll go to procurement and, you know, they might be buying this box really well, but we sort of challenge it, well, are you buying the right box? So we kind of bring in our design and engineering expertise. Adept is a company, we've just over 100 engineers on staff. You know, how do we utilize all these engineers and really optimize the package from the client perspective? And then go to procurement and say, you know, hey, this is the right material, this is the right spec, and then back into who's the right supplier. So we always joke, you know, you go to the corrugated manufacturer and you get a corrugated solution.
Yeah.
it happens to be the best solution is more corrugated. So really kind of taking a step back from the client perspective and utilize our engineering to really drive, you know, overall, you know, margin improvement.
Yeah. What's the if you're a hammer, everything's a nail.
Yeah,
that's it. And but it is really true. And it's been, maybe it was a point of frustration for me when I was just starting off in packaging. I was in procurement and sourcing, and the people that were really, that are still people that I connect with, now, what is it, 13 years later, were people who really helped me understand when I was doing procurement that they weren't the right fit, and that there were maybe some other people or there was, you know, if it was a corrugated person who's like, you know what, you actually don't want to probably be in corrugated for this. You might want to look at a folding carton, or you might want to look at flexible packaging. That those were people that, yeah, they kind of punted on an opportunity because I didn't know any better at the time. I probably been like, yeah, this seems like a good one. But they punted on it. And now 13 years later, the amount of referrals and connections that I've been able to send over there has been probably well paid for it. So it's totally true that becomes really important. And that's kind of the role that you guys play. So that's awesome about Adept. But since this is not the companies of packaging podcast, it's the people of packaging. So where do you live? You know, how did you get into this business? Did you just, you came out of the womb and you were like, I want to be in value optimization for packaging. And that was your first word. Your first word. First word was ROI.
That was more if you can't hack it, pack it. But
okay, got it.
No, so my growing up, my next door neighbor was a teacher, and she actually knew someone who went into packaging at RIT. So I grew up in upstate New York, just outside Rochester. So, you know, I was just talking to this teacher next door when I was in high school. She kind of told me about it, and I checked it out, and it was kind of interesting. I think it's still, but you know, at the time RIT had 100% job placement. Mm-hmm. You know, the starting salaries were really well. This seems to make a lot of sense. So,
right.
So I checked it out and just really liked it. So I'm a graduate from RIT in packaging.
Nice.
I did my co-op in Rhode Island at Hasbro Toy Company. So okay. Started kind of on the toy side. You know, fell in love with Rhode Island. Ended up staying there. My first role was with Smurfit Stone back in the day.
Yeah.
As a corrugated sales rep. So my theory at the time was, if I started in sales and failed, I could fall back in engineering. But if I sort of established an engineering career and then wanted to try sales, in my head, I was like, it's a riskier move going that way than being established. So that was the thought process. So I started in sales on the corrugated side. Worked at a sheet plant. Kind of goes back to what we started with, really ingrained of everything should be corrugated, and it was not for me. So from there, I went to Unisource, or what was now Veritiv.
Yeah.
And mostly because I liked the idea of being able to sell a solution and choose what's right for the client. That's what drove me there. And then so I was there for a while, and interestingly enough, I was a bit of a rogue salesperson. So I saw an opportunity to develop breast milk storage bags. So I ended up flying over to China. I literally booked a flight. I had no plans, nothing planned, just showed up. And set up an entire supply chain over a week.
Wow.
Literally driving through China and started importing all these breast milk storage bags. And eventually it blew up in a good way. Volume just really exploded, and I got in trouble. you can imagine if user found out there was this rogue sales rep. So they actually started the division out of Chandler, Arizona, the global group, and specifically built out a team. So for like the last 10 years of my Veritiv career, I was focused on the global group. So brand owners based here in the States that manufactured overseas. So it was pretty extensive travel over there. You know, I would typically go, 10, 12 times a year.
Oh, you didn't live over there then? You were just...
No, I would just commute back and forth.
Wow.
Mostly like China, Taiwan, and Malaysia were like the big three, and a little bit through Poland.
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm thinking naturally, if you're going to be in China, Taiwan, and South Korea, you should probably hit up Poland.
Sneak in Poland there. No, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did that for 13 years.
Okay.
And then, I think it's on a personal note, I ended up getting a bunch of blood clots in my leg from traveling. So I always joke, you don't have to spend a lot of time in a Malaysian hospital to rethink some life decisions. I have four kids.
Okay.
So I've now found out I have a genetic disorder that makes me more susceptible, and I'm on medicine. It's fine. But, and the other weird thing that happened, that Malaysia flight that disappeared.
Yeah.
I was on that exact flight the week before.
What?
And I was like, I'm done.
So
I'm just switched to Adept and kind of got out of the global travel side. So yeah, between those two things, it was.
Yeah. That would shake me too.
Yeah. Yeah, what am I doing? Yeah, there's only one red eye. out of Malaysia back into China.
Wow.
That flight. Yeah. I missed it by a week.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, that would probably, you know, send somebody into some self-reflection between the hospital and the flights disappearing. Wow.
Yeah.
So then how did you get connected up with Adept then? Where did you know of them before when you were?
Yeah, so I knew a little bit. Kind of my long-term goal was always kind of move into consulting. You know, the idea of consulting sounds good. I think it's good. But, you know, I think the idea of that was always attractive to me. I knew some people that worked there. So I just spoken to them over the years. I was doing pretty well. I was doing really well as a selling commodities, but you know, like so pretty poor change of that. So it just seemed like a really good opportunity, really fast growing company, and you know, ability to kind of influence kind of where we were going a bit was really attractive.
Yeah, that's awesome. I remember when I was in at Colorado State, which is where I went to college, I was in a business management class. That was my focus. And they were going around asking everybody what they wanted to do. And I want to say 80% of the people said, I'm going to get into consulting. And and my professor said something that, I don't remember the exact quote, but it was something to, along the lines of, you have to do something first.
Yeah.
And it was like, these kids were just like, what do you mean? Like, I can't be a 22-year-old consultant right out of college. They're like, no, you have to figure out a thing to do.
Yeah.
Like management consulting is a very, you know, there's a lot of people who do it. They don't just hire you at 22 to be a management consultant necessarily. I'm sure there's the consulting Doogie Howser out there who's like, I did it. But yeah, it is. It's awesome though. That one, you were able to realize what was valued.
Yeah.
You know, obviously your health is valuable and your family life is valuable. And then your life, when you start reflecting through a plane disappearing in Malaysia. And cool that you had an outlet to go find at Adept. How long have you been at Adept?
So I think next month will be 3 years.
All right. Yeah. So I've known you for half of your Adept life then is what we're.
True, yeah.
All right, we'll stick with that. that's cool. And so you started in, as you were talking about your introduction and the group that you lead up at Adept. So you mentioned four. So you are in the value optimization group, and I want to dig into that. But what are the other three groups at Adept?
Yeah, so there's Adept Packaging, kind of like our legacy consulting business. That's a mix of, they're probably split, probably pretty evenly 50-50 between life science and what we call CPG, which really is anything non-life science.
Yeah.
That's where it's a combination of, you know, strategic consulting projects to staffing. You know, we've got, you know, major clients that we've got 10, 12, 15 people on site.
Mm-hmm.
On the contingent labor and like product support, project management support, all the way through. You know, like sustainability projects. We do a lot of spec work, spec optimization.
Okay.
Really a wide range of sort of packaging support. So almost packaging engineers on demand, if you will. Really supplemental support, or if you need like SMEs or just even, you know, regular work.
Okay. Kind
of ebbs and flows of that. So that's Adept Packaging. We have Adept Digital, which is our connected packaging group. So anything track and trace, serialization, smart packaging, anything in that connected world. We're doing some seed to sale systems for cannabis at like the state level.
Mm-hmm.
All through the sort of that RFID and the different ways to kind of track packaging. And the group in there, they're almost more IT than packaging.
Sure.
Both combination, but a lot more of the technical packaging, if you will.
Okay.
Then we have Adept Talent, which is, we also hire quite a few internally engineers. So we're actively hiring all the time. I mean, packaging people are looking for a job, short plug. I think we have 15 openings at the moment.
Okay. So, and that is, and maybe you're going to describe it, but that would be, if you're a packaging engineer and you're looking for a job, then go to Adept Talent and you're connecting up almost like a recruiting service.
Yeah, so it's both. So Adept Group as a whole, well, I think we have about 15 openings.
Got it.
For working for Adept. And then we also, for clients, if a company wants to hire an engineer, we act as a third-party recruiter.
Okay.
We've got some really good connections throughout the industry.
Yeah.
You know, the recruiter has been doing it, I think, for 11 or 12 years now. So she knows just about everyone.
Right.
In that space. So it's a combination of placing people at clients directly where they would work directly for those companies or through Adept.
Yeah.
One of our business units.
And what I think it really probably shows is the breadth of the packaging industry as a whole, that you are, you know, you're one company and, you know, you're talking about track and trace and, you know, you're talking about life sciences and CPG companies and staffing and digital and RFID and, you know, serialization and cost optimization. You know, the amount of pieces within a company that has to interact with. I mean, you've talked about finance, you've talked about IT, you've talked about HR, you talk about marketing, creative, sales,
supply chain,
procurement. I mean, it's one of those things that it's like a little secret ninja.
Yeah.
Inside of a business that nobody really realizes until somebody looks up and they're like, wait a second, packaging. I was going to say it's like a disease, but maybe it's a bad time to say that. But it's, you know, just kind of creeps in everywhere. And all of a sudden you're like, we're all talking about packaging. This is crazy.
Yeah. No, we always joke about that internally of, you know, we're sort of this like hidden force, you know, we're like, you know, hidden behind these big brands that are driving these major substantial changes, just kind of in the background, you know, kind of executing that. It doesn't always get the visibility. It's, you know, I think as we're working on these podcasts, I mean, we see it, I'm sure you see it too, you know, like packaging's a lot of times, you know, last of thought, you know, it's like, oh yeah, a great product. And then it's like, oh wait, we ship in a month. how are we going to get it through? So
yeah,
let's kind of move that up.
Earlier I did an interview with Alex Reed from Truman's. And the thing that I thought was so cool about what they did is they kind of started with, I mean, they didn't start with packaging, but packaging was at the front end of their thought process as creating a valuable experience and solving supply chain concerns and solving sustainability issues. It was really neat how they brought it in at the forefront as part of their solution, not just, oh, we have this great product, how are we going to get it to somebody? Which sadly, you probably experience it more than I do, but sadly is something that does happen. And you know, I've always thought it's interesting whenever I've been dealing with a project, which is somebody comes to me and is like, I need this done in 2 weeks. And I'm like, well, how long have you known about the project? 6 months.
Yeah. Well,
we could have been working on it for the last 6 months. You know what I mean? Like, instead, we're going to throw something together that can be done in 2 weeks so you can meet your retailer's demand, which is really sad that we have to do that, because you could probably sell a lot more products if you just involve packaging early. Doesn't even have to be the supplier, just an engineer, you know.
Somebody at any consumer research or, you know, half the time you're buying the package, you know.
You
don't really see what's in it. It's really interesting how, I think it's getting better. I've definitely seen a trend where we're getting involved earlier and earlier.
Yeah.
We've had some experiences too. If we can get in early enough, they can redesign the product to help with potential packaging and distribution issues.
Right.
Damage. You know, there's some things that you can do through FEA to understand, hey, just if you can tweak this on the product side, it's a lot cheaper to fix than trying to band-aid it with, you know, a ton of protective packaging. So
it's
really interesting if you do get the right alignment and can get up early enough, you know, the value packaging can kind of drive the system.
Yeah. And is that kind of, so that's really where your group focuses. You talked about value optimization. So you want to be brought in, I don't want to say early, because maybe some of it is reactive where you're looking at what already exists. I would venture to guess probably more often than not, this is what you guys already have. And we're going to do an analysis of everything with you and bring you guys almost as a consultative partner on, hey, this is really what you need to be done. And you don't have a dog in the fight either way, because you know, like you said, you're not smart.
We're material and supplier agnostic, you know.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter who they buy from. Yeah. But we typically get brought in starting, you know, it's around existing, you know, where we sort of play the most, I would say, is, you know, procurement's not going to hit their goals. We get pulled in a lot. So, you know, we never get the softballs. But, you know, if there's like an issue, hey, they're not going to get their goals this year, they sort of need to think creatively, or you know, if they lose, especially now with COVID, you know, a lot of companies are losing volume. So sort of losing those traditional levers to pull on the suppliers. So if your volume is dropping and you need cost savings, it's a challenging discussion to have with your suppliers of, hey, I know we're a fraction of what we were and I can't really tell you where we're going, but I need better pricing. So we typically get brought in to sort of find opportunity. And then as these relationships evolve, and certainly that's when we'll potentially loop in those other groups of ADEPT as well. Instead of being reactive, how do we get more analytical? How do we get proactive and sort of learn up front to put better systems and processes in place?
Yeah. My dad gave me this little nugget when I was in high school, and he wasn't original to him. I think it was a military thing, and he called it an OODA loop, OODA, which is observe, orient, decide, act. And that, everyone's always going through this processing. And it seems like that's a little bit about what you guys do. You come in and you have to make your observations first, and then you have to orient everything around, from product to materials to how is it sitting on a pallet? Can you optimize the pallet? So you have to orient all of that and then help them make decisions. And then is it incumbent upon them? Are you out at that point where you're like, this is what we think. And so it's up for you if you want to act on it, or if you don't, but our role is to get you to a point of action, and then we can help you facilitate that. Is that sort of where you're at?
It sort of depends. A lot of companies just are looking for the concepts, and we validate them out, like you said. Really, we usually start with literally procurement data. Get an ERP plug-in right to their purchasing system that they use, and we start with sort of that data. We sort of normalize it and categorize it, and kind of like I said, we look at opportunities across the board from not just packaging but procurement. Could they be physically buying better? And then you typically start biggest opportunity first. Mm-hmm. Typically is how it works, just making the biggest impact to start. And that's typically either the most expensive or, highest volume, or some sort of combination of that. Or if they're seeing issues, in terms of, we do a lot of, warranty remediation, or, if there's damage that's causing some costs on the back end. So we sort of identify what makes sense to go after first. And like I said, we look at everything. It's a full clean sheet, the production process all the way through all the different steps internally and externally. We typically see, you kind of talked about like pallet patterns, logistics savings is huge. And it's, I think that's for packaging people to be looped into logistics and have a relationship there. That seems to be an issue at a lot of companies where there's such a disconnect. So we've seen a ton of projects where we're like, hey, your packaging is going to go up 10%, but you're going to save 60%. Overall on logistics savings and handling. And sometimes it's a really, really hard sell, because ultimately if they don't have responsibility, don't get credit for certain things, they don't always move through. But it's incredible how much, packaging can affect supply chain and trucks. And it's huge. About 60% of total savings we see is through logistics.
Oh, okay. That was going to be my question, is
about 60%.
What's the, if you could give a free nugget to everybody, as something to kind of take away. So you're saying it's maximizing, using packaging to maximize logistics, and that is really where they can see the biggest bang for their buck on costs, right?
Yeah, but it's certainly a combination. That's certainly a big bucket for sure. I mean, truck costs are fixed for the most part. If you can get more on a truck safely, mm-hmm. it's a pretty clean, easy win.
Yeah.
It can be complicated getting into that. Like I said, we do a lot around, custom supply chain testing, analyzing what, a lot of people obviously use ISTA and different ISTA standards, but, can you develop custom profiles to each client and really dial that in? There's some unique opportunity in really understanding what the actual supply chain looks like.
Is that where something like flexible packaging maybe comes into place? You talk about, it tends to be maybe a little bit more expensive, but from a logistics standpoint, I haven't even really thought about this before, to be honest with you, but from a logistics standpoint, the finished goods, you can probably fit significantly more on a truck.
Maybe you think about it too, if you think pouches, we'll see a lot of times they just stack them in. It's like, well, if you can rotate every other one, 180, you can get more in a box.
You fit twice as much, yeah.
it can be as simple as that of, you know, they might just be dropping them in, not even thinking, hey, is there a different way to pack these out? But no, for sure. No, I think flexible has a ton of opportunity to sort of disrupt that space. I mean, obviously, you know, there's some challenges around that. But no, for sure. And I think that's part of that, being able to look at the total true, like, you know, total landed cost, sort of the end to end.
Yeah.
Cost life cycle. It's really interesting kind of flushing that out. And like I said, there's different buckets. So to get total buy-in, you got to usually have pretty high level, like CEO, CFO level sort of guiding this, because like I said, somebody needs to be like, I know packaging budget's going up, but we're going to see it over here.
Right. Yeah. Someone's got to have a higher end view than just, yes, yeah. You only control this part of the P&L. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. The interesting part about that is, so I've kind of been toying around with the idea of sustainability and being in these four sustainable buckets. I mentioned this a couple times on the podcast, so sorry if you've heard this a bunch.
No. But sustainability always gets me wound up. I love it.
But the thing that, like, the least sexy part about sustainability is, I say it's got to be good for your profit. And it's like, you know, it's almost like the air, because everyone wants to talk these grandiose ideas about the materials and, you know, the carbon footprint. And those are great conversations to have. But whenever I bring in the profitability side of it, and I don't just mean your cost is going to go down. They have to run their own value proposition on, are we going to sell more products because millennials are, and Gen Z are representing more of the market, and there's much more of a causality in marketing. They can run those, and I can't give them that. But this idea that it has to, you know, it has to make dollars and has to make sense.
It's the only green that matters is the dollar. You
know, that's a good one.
Yeah, it really drives it. And I think we're getting there in terms of, you know, cost neutral. It's getting there. I think we can talk about sustainability too, but it's such a gray area too.
Yeah, but you're talking about sustainability. When you're talking about maximizing logistics and freight, that is sustainable. That is sustainability. It's just not the sustainability that I think people, they're not used to that framework around it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean? The least sustainable thing you can do is ship damaged product.
Yeah. Right?
You know, if you throw it away when at the other end, or if you've got, you know, a washing machine that's broken, and, you know, that's the least sustainable thing. So,
right.
So I think, yeah, it's finding that balance of obviously product protection and, you know, if you're talking shelf life on food and different things, but yeah, you've got to protect the product, or none of it matters.
Right. Ultimately. That's so true. So you're looking at we're in the middle of this thing. And I think it's a little bit of an unfair question, because anybody who says, I know what the world's going to look like after we kind of emerge from COVID, I think is really fooling themselves, but it's an interesting place to take yourself to sort of prognosticate on this idea of, well, what is the packaging industry going to look like? How are we, it's a very shifty industry. Like we talked about, it's kind of ebbing and flowing within a company, but it also sort of ebbs and flows. It's pretty reactive, to the market. So what are you maybe feeling and sensing, given the fact that you guys have such a breadth of products at Adept and Total, but then yourself and value optimization, what are some things that you're seeing in the industry that maybe some people should be prepared for?
Yeah, I think short term, and I guess we can debate what that means, but I think short term sustainability is going to take a hit. I think it's going to be deprioritized, you know, ultimately. I think it's going to take a step back in terms of kind of that big push for more sustainable. From a pure, like, you know, material, from like the classic sort of aspect of a sustainability.
Right.
I think, you know, we're certainly seeing more e-commerce, you know, e-commerce certainly, I think, is only going to expand. I think people are getting very comfortable ordering online. And, you know, if you weren't before, you know, groceries are showing up, you know, you don't really need to leave your house unless you want to. So,
right.
You know, I think there's obviously some challenges there. I think a lot of companies are very unprepared for the reality of e-commerce. You know, what that means, not only just from a packaging, but you know, fulfillment and the changes there. I think what also is kind of interesting, what will come out of this, when you look at, especially in like the food side, you know, they talk about these food shortages. Like there's not a shortage of cows, right? Like we didn't lose any cows to COVID. Yeah. The issue is, you know, all these restaurants were buying in different case counts. You know, they're buying bulk. And there isn't really much flexibility in the system to switch over. So the factory that was making blocks of meat couldn't quickly shift over to, you know, consumer sized portions. So a lot of that shortage in the market was just really was a packaging issue.
Yeah.
You know, they couldn't switch over fast enough to what consumers wanted. And we're kind of even seeing that on, you know, the bigger food companies of the world. You know, they've minimized the number of SKUs. So, you know, so instead of having 20 different kinds of Oreos, you know, they focused, all right, this is our best seller. We're just going to knock out, you know, one SKU and get the volume out. So I think there's going to be a, you know, short term also of, you know, if that's SKU rationalization, you know, where are they optimizing production, and then obviously how that impacts through the packaging side. But really, yeah, I think that's been a huge flaw on the packaging side is that flexibility, it wasn't there. And that's really what drove all those shortages. Yeah.
And it's super insightful too, thinking about if you are in, you know, if you're in packaging production, like the company that I work for at Fortis, you know, I think we're going to see that SKU reduction. I don't think that's going to be just short term. I think we're going to start to see, and it's going to be a bit of a top down pressure from a lot of the retailers who are scratching and clawing. And I mean, some of them are doing really fine, but yeah. You know, there's going to be some who are really going to be scratching and clawing for everything that they can in a shrinking market, as however we recover out of this recession. And so they're going to have to focus in and be like, we got to kick that one. We got to kick that one. And so I'm interested to follow the repercussions of that. Well, there's been this trend, a very awesome trend towards digital, and because of the high SKU proliferation. And so what might happen with that? I don't know. I don't have a prophetic leaning or anything. It's just an interesting thing to follow.
Yeah, no, I mean, digital, it's certainly going to come around. Obviously, the technology's gotten a lot better. The quality.
Oh yeah.
You know, as a consumer, awesome. You know, we have these conversations. You know, some people are like, "Oh, we can't use the digital." And I'm like, if I were to put two up here and you didn't know, in reality, could you really tell a difference? Especially right. You really have some interesting discussions around that. But you know, as that technology gets better, as you know, those price points have come down too. You know, you certainly know more of that. Of you know, I think it's less of a premium. As more people add the capability, so it's not necessarily is unique, which is good, I think, overall in that getting sort of market adaptation to it. But
I
think the flexibility, I think, is going to be sort of, as you look back from a packaging perspective, that was probably one of the biggest risks. You know, supply chain risk. You know, throughout this, you know, you saw some of those news reports where you know initially they said you know COVID can last on corrugated for 24 hours. In my head, I was thinking, oh, you know, all right, I should be good and, you know, either put it in my garage for 24 hours or scrub it down. But from a production point of view, what it meant for a lot of people is they had to sit boxes on their trucks for 24 hours before they're allowed to ship in. And so the ripple down effect of, you know, I was thinking as a consumer, I was like, oh, I should be careful. It might be on there. But from a production point of view, you know, like the food company doesn't want the risk. So if you're making a box, you have to sit on it for 24 hours in a secure location to clear it out before you can deliver in. You lose some of that just in time, and so I think it's exposed a lot of supply chain issues.
For 100%. Well, so we've talked about a little bit with some of these problems, so I like to ask this magic wand question. I haven't asked it every time, but I find it to be kind of fascinating. So you're handed the golden scepter, the golden magic wand of the entire packaging industry. And it's a broad question, but it's intentionally broad. So what's one, or, you know, you can pick a couple of things that you say, like, I just wish I could fix this. Just get rid of this part of packaging.
So I think, on the sustainability side, this is before I get myself in trouble, this is Jared Spencer's personal opinion, not
sure.
Not adept groups. On the sustainability side, really, I think it's really interesting. And I think you and I can have a good discussion, especially around like films. You know, there's so much misinformation out there. And I'm a true believer. I gave a speech actually at a sustainability conference. And in the middle of the sustainability conference, the host, like the actual facility, stopped us and made an announcement that please stop throwing out the recyclable products. You put them in the wrong bins. And I'm like, we are packaging people.
Yeah.
Sustainability people at a sustainability conference, and we were physically recycling wrong. You know, and it's like, well, we can't figure it out. And we apparently care and are at this event specifically for this. Like, how do we expect, you know, the consumer to do this? You know, like the consumer is not going to figure it out if it's complicated. You know, you look at some of these pouches, you know, my kids ask me all the time, is this recyclable? You know, they don't know. It looks right. Like it should be, but, you know, maybe it's not. So, you know, especially in the film world, I would say, you know, as we get in these complicated structures and multi-layer structures, you know, can we get to single structure film? You know, I think you can. You know, obviously there's some challenges and balance there. So like I said, around like a lot of false claims or misleading claims around like compostable. Compostable is a whole world of shenanigans, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's getting better. You know, I mean, you look at some of this stuff, it's got the chemicals in it that have no half-life, you know, and it's like, is it actually better?
I'll tell you a funny story about that. I have a really similar story to you, and it involves compostable, not recyclable. And I think I've told this story before. So I was at a conference in Salt Lake City, and Salt Lake City is dubbed the Silicon Slopes because we have a really amazing tech community here. And it's really cool to watch. So they do this tech summit every year. And this past year, it is the smartest people from, like, Mark Zuckerberg was the keynote speaker. It's very high level, you know, tech people and really impressive job. So very smart people. So similar to what you're talking about, we're at this packaging sustainability thing. And I'm walking around and the water cups were all the eco product PLA water cups, sort of free water. And I'm walking around and every bin, it had trash and it had recycling, and every bin was overflowing with these water cups to recycle. And I'm like, no, you cannot recycle these water cups. They're not going to. And the problem, it's not just this annoyance. Like, you start to really, you follow the trail all the way down, and you start talking to people in recycling and material reclamation and all these things. And they're like, it is a disaster that people don't, like, we are awful initiators of the recycling supply chain as individuals. We're really, really bad at it. And I just thought, this is, how fascinating is this? And I started asking people, why would you, like, what is it that you think about this cup that made you put it in there? Well, it says compostable. And I'm like, these are the smartest people in my state.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them, because I probably would have thought the same thing. I see it, it's green, it's got leaves on it, it says compostable. And what have I been trained to think? Reduce, reuse, recycle, and the three R's, and so I just drop it in there. And so I totally agree that I might have a different magic wand, but that would be like close to like number two. Like, I just want to educate everybody so that we can make everything clean. That would be a great waving.
And like, own it. If it's not recyclable, and tell me the benefits why, and that's fine. You know, I'm my personal belief is, you know, extended producer responsibility. It's very unpopular.
Yeah.
But to me, that to me is the ultimate. Until that happens, I don't think any meaningful change is actually going to happen in the United States.
Oh man, we could have a whole other conversation about extended producer responsibility. But I think it's a great concept. So I like it. That would be a whole other episode.
Yeah.
So, cool deal. Well, how do people get in touch with you? You know, if somebody's listening to this and they're like, yes, I don't know anybody, by the way, who's like, you know what my job is at this company is I need to spend more money on packaging.
Yeah.
That I've been hired, with the express responsibility of increasing our cost of goods sold. So, hopefully there's a lot of people who are in procurement, who are like, yeah, I would love to engage with these guys and see if they can help me out. So what's the best way for them to get in touch with you? And just engage with Adept as a whole.
Yeah. So, I mean, in general, our website, you know, adeptpackaging.com is probably the easiest way in general. You know, certainly it shows the different segments that we talked about. There's a, you know, contact us. On LinkedIn, you know, my email is just jared.spencer@adeptpackaging.com, but fairly easy to find out there. But no, absolutely. You know, like I said, we're definitely seeing the the priority of cost savings is really shifted in the last couple of months. It's been really interesting. As this sort of pandemic's gone on, it's certainly becoming more and more of a priority.
Yeah. I can only imagine it's not going to go away for a while, for sure. Well, Jared, thanks a ton for finally making this happen.
Yeah.
And appreciate you being on, and hopefully some people can reach out, adeptpackaging.com, and I'll put some LinkedIn and your email in the show notes and all that stuff. So stay safe, and appreciate you being on.
Yeah, thanks, everyone.